All right, good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So first of all, yasher koach to everyone who came out in this cold weather. Welcome to everyone who's joining us online. This is the downside of having the online feature. It disincentivizes or de-incentivizes coming out. But welcome to everyone who's coming with us to learn tonight. So let's begin. I actually want to focus again on an episode that we discussed last year. And it's an episode that is exceptionally troubling in the parasha. Take a look at number one. And it's an episode, by the way, that only encompasses, as you're going to see, a total of three psukim in the Torah, but yet seems to defy just basic comprehension. Vayhi baderach bamalon, and it was on the way in an inn. Vayifkeshehu Hashem, HaKadosh Baruch Hu met Moshe, vayivakesh hamito, and went ahead and wanted to kill him. Vatikach Tzipora Tzor, Tzipora took a sharp stone. Vatichras es Arlas Bina, she cut off the foreskin, the Arla of her son. Vatogal Leraglov, she threw it at his feet. We'll discuss whose feet it was. Vatomer, and she said, Ki Chasan Damim Ata Li. Literally, a Chasan Damim, a bridegroom of blood you are to me. Vayiref Mimenu Oz Amra Chasan Damim Lamulos. So he released him, and then she said, a bridegroom of blood concerning the circumcision. So before we go on, tonight's shiur is sponsored in memory of Rabbi Irvin Price, Rav Shlomo Aryeh ben Ramosha, Zichrono Livracha, whose yahrzeit is tonight and tomorrow, and we hope that in the merit of our Talmud Torah's Neshama will have an aliyah. So the question is obvious. The question is, what is going on in this particular episode? What's happening over here? We seem to have this situation where Moshe Rabbeinu seems to run into trouble. Moshe Rabbeinu is met by God, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, just to give you the context of this, just a couple of psukim earlier, remember again, we had the episode by the Sneh, the episode by the burning bush, where Moshe Rabbeinu does not want to assume the mantle of leadership of the Jewish people, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu essentially forces it upon him. So how are we to understand this conflict? On one hand, we have over here God convincing or telling Moshe that he must assume responsibility for the people, telling Moshe, you are the man, and just a couple of psukim later, in some nondescript hotel, in the midst, on the journey on the way down to Egypt, suddenly HaKadosh Baruch Hu is ready to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. So how do we reconcile these events? What is actually happening over here? And of course, the fundamental question we ask each and every week, which is, what is it that we are to learn from this particular episode? So take a look at number two. So some of these are ideas that we covered last year, and some of them we're going to see are new. So I'm going to give you a little bit of background. So some of it, if you remember the shiur from last year, some of it will be good chazara, and then we'll introduce some new ideas as well. Take a look at number two. So again, this is approach number one. Why it's the Rashbam? The Rashbam says, number two, Vayif Kesheyu Hashem, Ki Haya Misatzel Bahalichasu Umolich Ishto Banov. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu upset at Moshe Rabbeinu? Because Moshe, Mis'atzel Bahalichaso, literally was derelict. Mis'atzel is Lashon of literally like lazy. Moshe Rabbeinu was lazy, although I don't like to use that word by Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu perhaps was a little bit more lax in his journey down to Egypt. Umolich Ishto Ubanov. Because he was bringing his wife and his children with him. So at the Rashbam, remember the Rashbam is Reshul ben Meir, grandson of Rashi. What the Rashbam seems to be saying was like this. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted Moshe Rabbeinu to go ahead and get down to Egypt as quickly as possible. And apparently that included going flying solo. That included not bringing the family. Moshe Rabbeinu, which if you think about it, is logical. Why in the world would Moshe Rabbeinu be bringing his family down to Egypt when it is God's plan to be able to extract the people from Egypt? So therefore, the Rashbam feels that Moshe Rabbeinu made a wrong decision. He should not have brought his wife and children, first of all, because again, well, primarily because they would slow him down. So why? So you have to ask then a follow-up question, which is, so why does Moshe Rabbeinu bring his family? Why is Moshe Rabbeinu somewhat lax in executing his agency for God? See, here we have the Medrash. And the Medrash number three writes, Vahi baderech bamalon, im derech lama malon, Ela melamit shahaya Moshe nichnas v'yotzei mimalon l'derech u'miderech l'malon. So the Medrash says something interesting. He says, Vahi baderech bamalon, the Medrash writes, means that Moshe Rabbeinu was not fast, was not quick in this journey. He started on the journey, He checked into a hotel. He started again. He checked into another hotel. In other words, he doesn't seem in a big rush to get down to Egypt. Why not? Moshe Rabbeinu is not sure. Should I go down to redeem the Jewish people in Egypt or not? Moshe Rabbeinu is not sure. Are the people really ripe for redemption or not? There's a part of Moshe Rabbeinu that's unsure. Now, again, remember a little bit of context. You ask yourself, why would Moshe Rabbeinu be unsure about the salvation ability of the Jewish people? Because remember again, what happened to Moshe in the beginning of this week's parasha? Moshe Rabbeinu goes out and he tries to go ahead and help another Jew in distress. And what happens? His fellow Jews turn on him, right? There's the entire episode where Moshe Rabbeinu sees the Ishmitri, the Egyptian taskmaster, beating up the Jewish servant. Moshe Rabbeinu steps in and tries to help. And two individuals who the Medrash identifies as Dasan Va'aviram threaten to turn Moshe Rabbeinu into the Egyptian authorities. This leaves a very bitter taste in Moshe Rabbeinu's Moshe Rabbeinu's mouth, and was one of the major reasons that he chose to flee from Egypt. God says to Moshe, it's time to redeem the people. You are the man, you are the agent, you are the messenger, you are the facilitator of redemption. And the Medrash says the same. Moshe Rabbeinu says, okay, God, I'm going to go because you told me to go. But the truth is, I'm not 100% sold that you could actually redeem this people. I'm not 100% sold that actually these people are capable of being salvaged. So, you know, essentially what the Medrash describes over here is Moshe Rabbeinu is being, for lack of a better term, a little bit passive-aggressive. Meaning, so what happens? He's going to go, but he checks into the hotel. Then he starts the journey again. Then he stops again, which fits in well with Rashbam as well, as to might be one of the motivations why he brought his family with him. Why did he bring his family with him? Because he knew that they would what? Slow him down. And the truth is, that's what he's interested in. He's interested in stalling in this process a little bit. Number four, therefore writes the Chizkuni, Vayvakesh HaMisol Moshe, Shehare Hayolo, Laleches Levado B'chipazon B'shlichu Shalmakom. So why is God angry with Moshe Rabbeinu? Why is he ready to kill him? Because Moshe should have gone quickly down to Mitzrayim. He shouldn't have tarried. He shouldn't have waited. So remember again, he shouldn't have tarried on two levels. Number one, don't check into the hotel, then begin to go, then check into the hotel, then begin to go. Furthermore, why are you bringing your family? Right? You're going to start going on a road trip now with Tzipora and the kids. You have two. You're going to travel with two babies in tow. You know they're going to slow you down. And as such, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gets angry at Moshe for slowing down the process of redemption. Okay. So therefore, what we have so far, according to the Rashbam, the Medrash, and the Chizkuni, is Moshe Rabbeinu is not sure if the people are really salvageable. It's a little bit passive-aggressive. It brings the family, they slow him down. He checks in and out of hotels, that slows him down. God gets angry at him for tarrying. God gets angry at him for taking his time. So look at number five. So what now? So this is all very interesting. There's only one problem with this approach, and it is, what does it have to do with the Bris Milah? Right? Remember again, so now I understand why it says Vahi Baderach Bamalon. Moshe Rabbeinu is still, quote unquote, traveling because it's taking him a while. He's at the hotel because he's checked in and therefore it's taking a little bit of a longer time. HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants to kill him. We got all that. But then the Torah launches into another narrative. Tzipora takes the baby, gives the baby a bris milah, throws the foreskin, the arla, at his feet. Who knows who his? Is his God or is his Moshe Rabbeinu? And she makes this whole declaration. What does the bris milah story have to do with the first part of the explanation? So look at the Rashbam again in number five. Vatichros, ho'ila lo lemoshe ha-mitzvah lahatzilo kimo karban. Kein sha'asu Gidon u'manoach kishenira lahem hamaloch. So amazingly enough, the Rashbam explains that why does Tzipora do the bris milah here and now? To serve as a merit for her husband, who is in mortal danger. She realizes that Moshe Rabbeinu, her husband, is in danger. She does the mitzvah bris milah now, hoping that that mitzvah will somehow serve as a merit for him. L'raglav, she takes the art of the foreskin and she throws it down at Moshe's feet. Shal Moshe, lehisratzos hamalach bekach, So what happens? So Tzipora does the bris milah. She does the mitzvah as a merit for her husband Moshe. She throws the foreskin down at Moshe's feet. That literally the bris should be as a chus for him. Ki chason damim atali bedamim halalu. With these blood, Tzipora says the blood of the milah. Yisha'er li chasni. May my husband continue to remain alive. So this is a very dramatic interpretation. So according to this approach, again, this is approach number one. God is angry at Moshe for tarrying, for taking too long to get down to Egypt. Moshe takes too long by bringing the family, by checking into hotels along the way. He's literally in mortal danger at the hands of God. Tzipora saves her husband how? Through the merit of the mitzvah of Bris Milah. She does that mitzvah in Moshe Rabbeinu's merit, and it is the mitzvah that ultimately saves her husband. Okay, that's the first approach. Take a look at number six. Another approach. So this is from the Sefer Toldos Yitzchak. So Toldos Yitzchak, I put a little biography over here, is Rav Yitzchak ben Yosef Karo. So he writes the following, and this is quite dramatic. Now this Toldos Yitzchak, the truth is a much longer piece. So I'm only giving you, in past years when we looked at this Toldos Yitzchak, I did a much longer piece. I'm only giving you kind of the punchline of it. The Toldos Yitzchak writes, Ubizosak Dama Ne'emar, Shetzipora leben harishon shu gershom, afal pi shehigoya hirshasa lemoshe sheyamo beno. Remember again, the baby that's being circumcised over here is Tzipora and Moshe's youngest son, their second son Eliezer. Their first son Gershom was born in Midyan already. So what happened when Gershom was born? Tzipora agreed to have him circumcised. Now it's interesting that the Toldos Yitzchak refers to Tzipora as a goya, as a Gentile woman. Now, the truth is, what does it mean when it refers to as a Gentile woman? That she's not from the Abrahamic family, right? She's not, unlike Moshe Rabbeinu, who is a descendant of Yaakov, a descendant of the tribe of Levi, so Tzipora is not an Abrahamic descendant. She's from the people of Midian. So what's interesting to note is, did Tzipora buy into monotheistic belief? So Toldos Yitzchak would have us believe that the answer to that is no. No. That Tzipora was a nice girl that Moshe Rabbeinu met, that Moshe Rabbeinu happened to save at the well from the difficult shepherds, and ultimately they got married. Did she share Moshe Rabbeinu's common beliefs? Did she share his values? Did she share his emunah? Toldos Yitzchak says, not necessarily. So when son number one is born, she agrees to have him circumcised. Why? Ki amra, I'm second line, 6 aleph, ki amra, me'achar sha'aviv mahul, yeah, Gamkin Aben Mal, because Tzipora said, look, you know what? Moshe is circumcised, so our son should be circumcised as well, like his father. But however, what did Tzipora realize? So Tzipora underwent that same moment that every mother who has a bris for a son undergoes, where you hear those cries, right? And again, she realized, wow, this is not simple. My child is in distress, my child is bleeding, my child is in pain. And so she makes a decision. Lachin kisheyalda le'Eliezer shehuzeh shehiskebeka. And therefore, again, when she has her second son, who will become known as Eliezer, which is the child that we're referring to in number one over here, lo'azva le'Moshe sheyamul also. She did not let Moshe circumcise the child. It's amazing. Right? Tzipora said no to bris milah. Putting my foot down, no bris milah. Ki amra penyamos. She said, I'm not going to subject my child to this danger, right? Again, also understand that circumcision, I'm not going to subject my child to that danger, and therefore, no. Ulefisha haya ro'i le'Moshe shiyamo osabaka arkarcha. So what should Moshe have done? His wife says, no bris milah. What should Moshe have done? Moshe should have circumcised the child anyway. He should have gone forward and done it anyway. Lachay, therefore, vayifkasheyu Hashem, vayivakesh hamiso. Therefore, again, what's happening over here, says the Toldos Yitzchak, Moshe Rabbeinu was traveling down to Egypt, and his son Eliezer is uncircumcised. HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, what's going on over here? Moshe Rabbeinu, you are the servant of God, and you're not complying with the word of God. Therefore, he stands ready to go ahead and kill Moshe Rabbeinu. Vayivakesh hamiso. Therefore, velachin hi atzma she'asasa ha'avera, so therefore what happens? What happens? So when Sipora realizes what is happening, she realizes, however she realized it, that her husband is being held accountable for the lack of circumcision, she goes ahead and she circumcises the child herself. Last two lines in 6 Aleph, V'zehu sha'amra chason damim atali, kilomar, chasni hayames l'sibasi, shalo azavtiv l'molo. That's why Tzipporah says, chasan damim atali, my husband would have been killed as a result of not having circumcised this child. Paragraph base, ubazah perish, huter hasafek harishon, od shehu, lama lomal osa, lefishay anus mitzad ishto. Now we understand why it is that Eliezer was not circumcised, not really as much by Moshe's choice, but because Zipporah put her foot down, and she would not allow the child to be circumcised. Od nira hatam, shatam shalomal osa Moshe, hu lefimash hasafti lamala, So the Toldos Yitzchak advances what is really a very dramatic idea. Now you should just know the Toldos Yitzchak is not making up this idea. This concept is found in the Medrash, where the Medrash writes that Tzipora agreed that son, essentially the Medrash has an expanded form where Tzipora says, child number one will follow your ways Moshe, and child number two will follow my ways, right? Which also creates this picture, which is so fascinating, of a Tzipporah, who is not really what we call an Ezer Kenegdo of Moshe Rabbeinu. She was a good wife, she was a wonderful mother, but she was not a spiritual helpmate to Moshe Rabbeinu. They are on two very different spiritual pages. Moshe Rabbeinu circumcises the first child, Tzipporah puts her foot down and will not circumcise the second child. Moshe Rabbeinu should have circumcised the child anyway, and his failure to do so ultimately incurs him divine wrath, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu is literally ready to kill Moshe Rabbeinu. It has to be Tzipora who circumcises the child in order to save her husband, A, because Moshe Rabbeinu is in mortal danger, B, because it's her decisions that put her husband in mortal danger, and she circumcises the child, saves her husband's life. Now, this is not finished yet. Take a look at number 7. So Rav Hirsch takes this one step further, and he says something quite amazing. Rav Hirsch writes, but it is not even necessary to go this far. We need only think that Tzipporah, who after all was not a daughter of Israel, and at the beginning had possibly not yet completely absorbed all the ideas of Moshe, found it hard to allow her child to be circumcised. In the force of circumstances, Moshe gave in to a postponement, but not thus was Moshe to come to Egypt, and not thus Tzipporah, not in Midian, but on the journey free from all influence of parents and relatives alone, thrown back entirely on herself, Tzipporah is to soar to the heights of Jewish womanhood. So if Hirsch understands this a little bit differently, see, according to the Toldos Yitzchak, Tzipporah ultimately circumcises her son Eliezer. Why? But to save her husband's life. Does it mean that she adopted her husband's theology? Does it mean ultimately, again, that she has come around to Moshe Rabbeinu's spiritual principles and beliefs? No. It's very simple. She doesn't want her husband to die, so she somehow intuitively understands that it's bris milah that has to be done. Rav Hirsch says, no, you're underselling it. What's happening over here is what we are seeing unfold before us. Is Tzipporah herself actively joining her husband on the spiritual journey? But she could not join him in Midian. Why not? Because in Midian, she was too enveloped by the ideologies of her family and of her home. She had to put a little bit of distance between herself and Midian, and once that happened, she was fully able to absorb and fully able to accept the ideology and theology of her husband and her husband's people. So again, if we bring this all together, so according to this second approach, what's unfolding over here is this story is not really about Moshe, but rather this story is about the evolution of Tzipporah. That before Moshe, this is quite fascinating, before Moshe Rabbeinu could go ahead and really become the agent of salvation, what does he need? He needs a partner. He needs a partner. Remember again, if you look at all the individuals in Bereishis, they are all power couples. There is no such thing as an Av without an Aim. No such thing as an Aim without an Av. They all must work collaboratively together. It would appear that although we would not have normally assumed that about a Moshe Rabbeinu, because the truth is, because we think about Moshe Rabbeinu from what we know later on in his life, that he essentially kind of leaves normative family life. But at least at this particular stage, at least at these beginnings, he needs a partner. The problem is, Tzipora is not his partner. Tzipora might be his wife, might be his spouse, the mother of his children, but she is not his partner in this spiritual endeavor. Again, remember, to give her a lot of credit, she's still uprooting the family and going down to Egypt, even though she might not even pledge allegiance to the God of her husband. She may not even pledge allegiance to this guy who is telling her husband to go back to Egypt, to go back to the lions. Then, but yet, she's following. Says Rav Hirsch, says the Toldos Yitzchak, what's happening over here? Tzipora is assuming her place as Moshe Rabbeinu's partner. She is engaging in difficult, dynamic spiritual activity for her to circumcise her son. Was the pinnacle, was the zenith of self-sacrifice. And when she does that, when she subjects her child to this process, she says to Moshe, I'm in this with you. We're a couple, we're a team, we're biyachad, we're together, and only together will we be able to allow you to execute and to ultimately fulfill your destiny. Okay, that's second approach. Take a look at the third approach. Again, another Rav Hirsch. Rav Hirsch writes, Vayif Kasheu. The same God who had just sent him out with such a great message and on whose mission he was just occupied suddenly came against him and preferred to let him die. From what follows, it is evident that Moshe had neglected to circumcise his son and that this was the cause of his life becoming suddenly endangered. Was he not embarked on a mission to accomplish the salvation of a people whose whole meaning and importance in the world rests on the idea of Mila? And should he, just he, bring in the midst of this people an uncircumcised child? Rather, let him die than let him introduce his mission with such an example. So first, there's something different over here. What does Bris Mila represent? Bris Mila represents the covenant between God and the Jewish people. That is the only reason the people are being saved now from the bonds of servitude. Did they deserve, did they earn salvation? They earn salvation? No. So why are they being saved? Ultimately, again, because of the covenant. So Moshe Rabbeinu, for you to bring an uncircumcised child into Mitzrayim, for you to bring a child into Egypt who does not bear the mark of the covenant, no. We're not going to have that. Better for you to die and not go to Egypt, and we'll find someone else than to go ahead and for you to deliver a contradictory message to the people. He says, this is how it seems Vayivakesh must be understood. A word which is doubly difficult if applied to God. God does not wish the death of any man, and he whom God wishes to kill is dead. But taken this way, he prefers, this word tells us, important fact, that God's plans are dependent on no man. Harbe shluchim lamakom. God has many messengers. No man, not even a Moses, is indispensable to God. It disposes of the erroneous idea into which we might have been led by the previous verses, by the insistence with which God pressed Moses to undertake the mission. We also see here how God does not overlook any fault in his messengers, not even in Moses. Quite on the contrary, Bikrovaya Kadesh, the point is here, right at the beginning, made very clear. So what Rav Hirsch is highlighting over here is something truly amazing. Rav Hirsch is saying is that what's the point of this entire story? No one is above the law, even Moshe Rabbeinu. I might have thought that Moshe Rabbeinu was so important, so integral to the salvation of the people, an indispensable cog in the wheel of national salvation, that perhaps he could dispense with some of the details. He need not worry about some of the little details of his Judaism. So what does the or of his monotheism? So what does the Torah teach us? Even a Moshe Rabbeinu, you're only going to retain your greatness if what? If you pay attention to the details. The moment you dispense with the details ultimately of your divine mission and of your personal belief and your personal practice is the moment that God no longer has any use for you. If that's the agency, if that's the personality you're going to forge, ultimately, harbe shluchim yesh lamakom. So according to this approach, Torah is teaching us such an incredible idea that it doesn't matter if you're a Moshe Rabbeinu or you're a regular person. God demands commitment. God demands allegiance from each of us. And the strength of our religious personalities is absolutely embedded in our attention to the religious details. And this is so important, because so often we think that we don't have to worry about the details as much. What's more important is that we somehow pledge our allegiance to the big picture, right? I'm involved in bigger things, better things, more important things. God will overlook some of the details. If anyone could have made that statement, it would have been Moshe Rabbeinu. And yet, again, Rav Hirsch tells us Moshe Rabbeinu dispensed with a detail. One detail, Bris Milah, and yet what happens? HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down hard, HaKadosh Baruch Hu comes down strong. Which now brings us to our last approach for tonight. So let's just, before we go on to the last one, just to kind of regroup a little bit. So remember, we're trying to understand what exactly it is that is happening in this particular episode, and by extension, what the contemporary relevance is for us. So we have approach number one, which was the Rashbam, the Medrash, the Cheskuni, and then the Rashbam again, that Moshe Rabbeinu is a little passive-aggressive in his getting down to Egypt. He's not sure if he should go. Why is he not sure if he should go? His doubt is not about God. What is his doubt about? The Jewish people. Are they really worthy of being redeemed or not? Moshe Rabbeinu is not sure, and Moshe Rabbeinu, again, remember, has voiced this concern to God, but God has seemingly ignored it or kind of swept it under the rug. So Moshe Rabbeinu now is kind of taking his time getting down to Egypt. Perhaps things will become a little bit clearer if I tarry a little bit. The Ribono Shel Olam gets angry at Moshe, tells Moshe unacceptable, ready to kill Moshe. Tzipporah saves Moshe Rabbeinu's life with the merit of Bris Milah. That's approach one. Approach number two, the story tells us the evolution of Tzipporah. Tzipporah is not on the same page as her husband, but by ultimately, again, performing the Bris Milah, either for the purpose of saving her husband's life, or as a way of actualizing her own commitment, she assumes the role of her husband's partner. She becomes not simply his wife, but his partner in his spiritual endeavor. Approach number three, the entire essence, Moshe Rabbeinu figures, you know what? I've got bigger fish to fry than the Bris Milah right now. We've got to get down to Egypt. We've got to redeem the people. We've got a lot to do. Let's dispense with the detail. The Ribono Shel Olam says, no, no, no. No one is above the details. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, and you see, we go through this all the time because sometimes we think that the details are not as important as long as I am engaged in some greater good. Being engaged in greater good is also important, but the true test of our spiritual mettle is ultimately our adherence and our allegiance to the details, which now brings us to our last approach. So take a look at number nine. So there is a beautiful Gemara Maseches Nedarim. The Gemara writes, Tanya, Rabbi Yeshua ben Karcha said, Gedola Mila, Mila is a great mitzvah, Shekol zechuyos sha'asa Moshe Rabbeinu lo amdu lo, kishen esrash lo min ha-mila. Because as much merit as Moshe Rabbeinu had, when ultimately he was derelict in performing the mitzvah of Mila, none of his other merits were able to save him. Shene'emar vayifkesheyu Hashem vayivakesh hamiso. HaKadosh Baruch Hu met him and wanted to kill him. Omer Rebbe. So Rebbe's bothered by this. Chas v'shalom, Shemoshe Rabbeinu nesach shalom in Amila. How can you say that Moshe Rabbeinu was derelict in performing it? Because remember, Rebbe would be bothered by Rav Hirsch. Because Rav Hirsch seems to say that Moshe Rabbeinu kind of pushed Mila to the side a little bit. Rebbe says, how could that be that Moshe Rabbeinu would be derelict with any mitzvah, although more so Bris Mila? He says, rather, what happened? Ela Amar Ka'alakach Amar. Moshe Rabbeinu said the following. It's a famous Gemara. Emol ve'etzei sakonehi. Remember again, Eliezer was born back in Midian, and he was already ready for Bris Milah when they were still in Midian. Moshe Rabbeinu had a problem. What was the problem? If I circumcise him in Midian, what's going to be the issue? We're not going to be able to travel. Shene'emar, vahiyo emashlishi biyosom kovim. Because remember again, we know that after Bris Milah, a person is in terrible pain, and it's a sakon, it's a danger for the baby to travel post-circumcision. So if I circumcise the child now in Midian, the child's health will be compromised, and ultimately we will be unable to travel. But what's the problem? The problem is, remember, so on the other hand, I'll say, Emol ve'esha shloshim. So maybe you'll say, okay, circumcise the baby in Midian, and wait 3 days before traveling. What's the problem with that? HaKadosh Baruch Hu Amar Li, Lech Shuv Mitzrayim. But that can't be either. Why not? Because God said to me to go down to Egypt. So Moshe Rabbeinu is in a little bit of a catch-22. On one hand, again, he couldn't give the child the bris milah. Why? Because if I give the child the bris milah now, then what? I'm going to have to wait down to go to Egypt. But God told me to go to Egypt now. So Moshe Rabbeinu intuited, he understood that the fact that God wanted him to go to Egypt now meant, don't do the bris milah now. So if Moshe Rabbeinu intuits that the divine will is that I should not do the bris milah now, so then what's the question? Then why is he held accountable for not doing it? To which the Gemara answers, Ella, mipnei man ne'anash Moshe. So if that's the case, why is Moshe Rabbeinu punished? Because when Moshe Rabbeinu reached whatever this destination point was, he took care of his lodgings first, and then only afterwards was he going to do the bris milah. As the pasuk says, that it was on the way and he took care of his lodgings first. So the question is obvious. The question is, well, what do you want Moshe Rabbeinu to do? Moshe Rabbeinu is traveling with a wife and is traveling with two children. So is it so crazy that he wants to first figure out what his accommodations are before he does bris milah? Why would Moshe Rabbeinu be held accountable for looking into the malon prior to going and doing the bris milah? So the Ebenezer writes in number 10, V'zeh ha'davar asa Moshe, ki lo haya yachol lehis acher, shelo yelech b'shlichos Hashem, uba'osam hayamim nolad Eliezer, ובעבור סקרנס הדרך לא מילאו, והיה רואי שיעזיו עם אמו וילך למצרים הוא לבד. So remember, the Ebenezer says what the Rashbam said earlier, which was what? This all goes back to what we said earlier, which was, he should have never had the family with him to begin with. He should have left them all in Midian, go down to Egypt, take care of business, and you'll be reunited, you'll go and you'll catch up with the family sometime later on. So according to the Ebenezer, the issue is, we're not faulting Moshe Rabbeinu for taking care of lodging first. What we're saying is what? The only reason you have to worry about lodging is why? Is why? Because you brought your family with you. And that's something you should not have done in the first place. So we're not faulting him for lodging, for finding lodging first. We're faulting him for bringing his family all together because they did not really have a role in this particular mission. But the truth is, we can understand this Gemara a little bit differently. Take a look at number 11. This is an interesting discussion by the Trumas Hadeshin. So the Trumas Hadeshin writes, 11 Aleph, Sheila, Haroa Levana Bechidusha Bimeachol, if someone sees a new moon during the weekday, during the week, Va'omer Namtin Levarech Al Chidusha Ad Lemotze Shabbos, Yafehem Osin Olav. So it's an interesting halachic question. We will see that there's a concept of doing Kiddush Levana, we call the blessing of the new moon, on Matzei Shabbos. Why is your idea of doing it Matzei Shabbos? Because the Gemara says a person should do it Matzei Shabbos kishum avusam, when a person is fragrant. A Shabbos endows a person with a spiritual fragrance, so better to go ahead and greet the new month, greet the new moon with the spiritual fragrance. So here's the halachic question that the Trumas Hadeshin is dealing with. Remember again, you have a limited window in which you could do Kiddush Levana. You could do it until the middle of the month, until the 15th of the month. So let's say again, I see a beautiful Levana outside tonight. I go out tonight, I see a beautiful Levana, and I think to myself, should I do Kiddush Levana tonight? There's the opportunity to do it right now. Or should I wait until Matzeh Shabbos? What is the halacha? Trumas Hadeshin writes, Tshuva, 11 days, Tshuva, it would appear, Yira diesh lechalik b'davar. It depends. Heicha deleil matzei Shabbos haba b'karov. You know, if it's Thursday night and Shabbos, matzei Shabbos is right around the corner. Eino leilos harbe b'chodesh. Kigon zayin ochas b'chodesh. Furthermore, and it's the beginning of the month, so there's still plenty of time until the middle of the month. Shafil imyem unan b'matzei Shabbos. Remember again, what's the concern? The concern is in order to say Kiddush Levana, you have to be able to see the moon. So right now, it's Wednesday night. I go outside, there's a beautiful moon. I want to wait, though, until Matzei Shabbos, but there's a concern that what? Matzei Shabbos may be cloudy. So the question is, do I take the present opportunity to go ahead and do Kiddush Levana, even though, again, it's not the best way to perform the mitzvah, or do I try to wait until Matzei Shabbos, where I can go ahead and do the mitzvah in a more pure and perfect form, but what? I run the risk of missing it on Matzei Shabbos. And because I've waited a few more days, I run the risk of totally negating the mitzvah. So what should I do? So Truma's Deshin says it depends. If it's the end of the week, it's Wednesday or Thursday, and what happens, and it's the beginning of the month, Shafilu mihiya yom una b'matzei Shabbos ubezu gimol daleos acharav adayin yesh zman lavarech ad sof leil tesvav. So let's say again, it's the end of the week, but it's the beginning of the month. So even if matzei Shabbos is cloudy, there will still be other days in which I can do kiddush levana. Ki hay gavna yafe lahamtin ad matzei Shabbos. It would appear that in such a circumstance, you can go ahead and you could wait until Matzei Shabbos. Because again, you have enough going for you over here. It's early in the month. Matzei Shabbos is only a few days away. However, it's good to do Kiddush Levana Matzei Shabbos when you are spiritually fragrant, wearing nice clothing. However, but if coming Matzei Shabbos is many days away, let's say it's a Monday, and furthermore, again, it's already advancing in the month. Shemiya ma'unan beizu gimel odal leilas achar of yavros ma'abracha, to the point that if it's cloudy on Matzei Shabbos, I run the risk on missing the window altogether. So what's the halacha? Ki hay gavna ein lahamtin ad Matzei Shabbos. In such a situation like that, take your present opportunity and don't go ahead and wait until Matzei Shabbos. Why? Tichol hecha deroi hu lehistapik. Because any time that you have a general concern that you may go ahead and miss out on the mitzvah, ein mashin osa, we do not delay. Afilu kedei la'asosa yosra min ha'mufchar. Even if I won't be able to do the mitzvah in the best way possible. So the Trumas HaDeshen, now again, remember, he's talking about a very specific case, but there's an amazing principle that comes out of here, which is what? That sometimes in life you have this choice between doing the mitzvah now, albeit what? In an imperfect fashion, versus going ahead and doing the mitzvah later on in a more perfect fashion. But the roll of the dice, the gamble is what? That if you wait till later on, what may happen? You may miss out on the opportunity altogether. So essentially, what the translation says, in the case of Kiddush Levana, if you have time, even after Matzei Shabbos, say Kiddush Levana, so you have nothing to lose by waiting till Matzei Shabbos, and even if it's cloudy on Saturday night at Matzei Shabbos, you do Kiddush Levana later. But if Matzei Shabbos pretty much is going to be towards the end of your window, and if it's going to be cloudy, then you're going to lose out on the mitzvah in its entirety, better to take the opportunity now, even though it's not a mitzvah min ha-mubchar, even though it's not the best mitzvah possible, than to wait for the best mitzvah possible, but to run the risk on missing out in totality. What does this have to do with our parasha? So I'm going to show you something absolutely amazing. Look at number 12. Writes Rav Kook. Rav Kook, in his Sefer Orach Mishpat, writes, Chason Damim, get ready for this. Hoya efshar ladun, sheyafe mitzvah muhuderes, kam kishem ha'achrim, kimoshin istapku aposkin bazeh. So Rav Kook writes, really quoting, referencing this Trumas HaDeshen that we just saw in number 11, that sometimes there is a concept of delaying a mitzvah in order to be able to perform it in a more beautiful fashion. Va'amarti bazeh inyan Moshe Rabbeinu alav ha-shalom shenis asik b'molon t'chila. How are you talking? So Rav Kook says, well, let's analyze this. Right? Remember the Gemara said that why is God angry at Moshe Rabbeinu? Not as much that he brought his hand, but why is he angry at Moshe Rabbeinu? Because he's taking care of his lodging accommodations before the mitzvah of circumcising his son. So Cook says, is it possible to believe that? Is it possible that Moshe Rabbeinu needs to check into his Homewood Suites before he goes ahead and he circumcises? This is Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu is all about the service of God. He puts everything on the back burner for the service of God. So is it what's happening over here? And if Cook says something amazing, he says, Omnam, hider mitzvah la'asos su'udah, Be'es Hamila. Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't just want to do the bris milah by the side of the road. What does he want to do? He wants to do a real bagels, lox. He wants to do the whole thing. He wants to do a bris milah in the most mohoder way possible, with a su'uda, with a meal, with guests. Choshav tov la'acher v'la'asos behider. It's not just the pshat that Moshe Rabbeinu is taking care of his lodgings first. Rather, what's happening over here? Moshe Rabbeinu makes a decision. I know I have a mitzvah in front of me. I know I have to do it. But here's my choice. I can do it by the side of the road in a very no-frills, nondescript, you know, fashion. Very simple, very basic. Or I could settle my family in. We can arrange a seudah. I could invite people. I could be Mekadesh. I could sanctify the name of heaven by showing people bris milah. I can go ahead and I can make something so beautiful out of this. That's what Moshe Rabbeinu. He says, Choshav tov la'acher. It is better to delay the mitzvah than la'asos pehiter, and to do it with greater beauty. V'yesh lefarish zeh ki chasan damim. That's why, again, the child is called the chasan dam dahainu sheya'ase su'uda v'simcha. Rav Kook says something amazing. Rav Kook says that Moshe Rabbeinu's chashrin, and again, this is an incredible chiddush, an incredibly novel idea, but Rav Kook's entire approach is that Moshe Rabbeinu's chashrin is, I know I have to do the mitzvah, but I would rather delay the performance of the mitzvah now and do it a little bit later, to be able to go ahead and do the mitzvah in an even beautiful, better form. What's God's reaction to Moshe Rabbeinu's approach? Very unhappy. Ribbono Shel Olam is very unhappy with Moshe. Why is HaKadosh Baruch Hu unhappy with Moshe Rabbeinu? Because take a look at number 13, the Yalkut Shemoni. So the Yalkut writes a famous medrash, Shushmartem es ha-mitzvos, excuse me, es ha-matzos, I'm sorry. Now again, the Torah over here is talking about that when you make matzah, you have to guard the dough. Why do you have to guard the dough? Because you don't want it to become chametz. Rabbi Yoshia Omer, Al Tikri Kain, Ella, don't read it, Ushmartem es hamatzos, rather as how? Ushmartem es hamitzvos. The same way that you guard the dough from becoming chametz, guard the mitzvos as a, what does this mean? Kederach she'en machmitzin es hamatzah, the same way that you don't allow the dough to sit, because you don't want it to become chametz, kach lo yachmitzu es hamitzvos. So too, a person should not go ahead and allow the mitzvos to become chametz as well. How does something become chametz? You let it sit there. You don't do anything with it. Don't let the mitzvos become chametz. Ela imba mitzvah liyadecha asei osa miyad. But rather, if a mitzvah opportunity presents itself to you, take advantage of it immediately. In other words, what is the Medrash saying? That sometimes in life you have a choice between taking advantage of your present opportunities, which may be highly imperfect, or waiting for some future opportunity that you think may be more perfect. But again, that future opportunity may or may not present itself. And when it presents itself, it may or may not be any more perfect than what you have in front of you now. And therefore, what does the Halacha say? What does Yalkut Shimoni say? Mitzvah abol yadecha al tach mitzena. That when the opportunity presents itself, when an opportunity presents itself, even if that opportunity looks imperfect, if that is the opportunity you have before you now, grab it, jump on it, take advantage of it, maximize it, and don't spend your life waiting for something better to come along. Moshe Rabbeinu, beautiful idea. You want to make a su'uda. That's wonderful. Moshe, you have no idea what's going to happen between now and the time you check into the hotel and you get the caterer. Second, Shparuch, who is trying to sensitize Moshe Rabbeinu, by extension, us, the reader, which is what? Here, you have the opportunity to do Mila now. Take it. Your opportunities in life present themselves. Take them now, even though they may be imperfect. Because, yes. Go right ahead. No, go right ahead. Go right ahead. Correct. Oh, so it's an excellent question. So I didn't mention it. So the Gemara, actually the Medrash also points out that now they were close enough to Egypt that even had they circumcised the child now, traveling a little bit further to Egypt would not have been a problem. Apparently the great distance between Midian and Egypt would have been too much, but now they're pretty much like in Egypt's backyard. So again, so you see what comes out over here is an incredible life lesson. Because the truth is, this happens to all of us in some way, shape, or form, and that opportunities present themselves, and we say to ourselves, you know what, it's a great opportunity, but I'm waiting for something better. I'm waiting for something more perfect. I'm just, you know, this is great, but it's not as perfect as I'd want it to be. And the truth is, we all know this from life experience. When you don't take advantage of your opportunities because you are waiting for something better. So what happens? What happens? Right? So then you know what happens. Then when that quote-unquote better thing comes, you then say to yourself, oh, this is great, but there's going to be something. If you get into the mindset of there's always something better, the grass is always greener on the other side, then by definition, you end up living a life of passivity, not taking advantage of your opportunities. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu is trying to sensitize us to in this particular section is take advantage of the opportunities that present themselves to you, no matter how imperfect they may be. So if we bring this all together from this incredibly, and again, I can't stress enough, this is a very strange episode, and it's an episode that you could just breeze through because it's three psukim out of a parasha that has a totally different narrative. But the Torah is teaching us, again, a number of incredibly important lessons. First of all, what it's telling us is, I didn't go into this enough, which is that it teaches us something in relationship dynamics, that in relationships, sometimes spouses are not on the same page. Sometimes they're just simply not holding with one another. But if you give people time, ultimately, again, people find the ability and the opportunity to self-actualize. Moshe and Tzipora are not on the same page. It's true, circumstances forced Tzipora's hand, but ultimately, again, she joined her husband in embracing his destiny. Another lesson we learn is that no one is above the details. That the true test of our spiritual metal, the true test of our spiritual identity, is not defined by the big things, but rather is defined by our ability to maintain a commitment to the details. The details is what makes or breaks our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And lastly, we learn an incredible, important life lesson. Don't spend your life always waiting for something better. Don't spend your life missing out on opportunities because you feel something better is going to come along. Or to state it a little bit differently, that in life, sometimes it's not about waiting for the perfect moment, but it's making the present moment perfect. That sometimes it's about taking the opportunities as they present themselves to you, recognizing that they're far from optimal, they're far from perfect, but they're the opportunities that I have, and therefore I have to find the courage to embrace them. All right, we'll stop over here for this evening. And Meretz Hashem, we continue with Parshas Vayera next week. There's Maariv in the Beis Medrash, Meretz Hashem at 9 o'clock. Just a few moments.